denied. On a busy street in New York City, a man hustles across an intersection and is just about to make it to the other side of the street when he's hit by a bus. As he lies dying on the sidewalk, a crowd gathers around. In pain, he says, "A priest. Somebody get me a priest." A policeman who happened to arrive on the scene immediately after it happened checks the crowd, but there's no priest to be found in among the people. In fact, there's no minister of any kind, no spiritual leader present in the group that had gathered around. "A priest, please," the man pleads. The man's condition is so bad that there's no time to call for a priest, and the policeman is at a complete loss as to what to do. Suddenly, an old Jewish man of about 80 years makes his way through the crowd. "Excuse me, officer, I'm not a priest. I'm not even Catholic, but for 50 years now, I've lived behind St. Elizabeth's Catholic Church on First Avenue, and every night I listen to the Catholic litany. Maybe I can repeat some of the familiar words to bring comfort to this poor man." Well, the policeman agrees, he's got no choice, so he brings over the elderly gentleman, helps him kneel down to the injured man. And the Jewish man bows his head, and everyone joins him, and he clears his throat, and in a solemn voice says, "Under the B, 4, under the I, 19. Caught you that time, I think. We may chuckle at this Jewish man who thought that bingo calling in the church hall was a religious ritual. But like so many other people, religion seems so often to be clothed in mystery. If you're trying to get close to God and understand his people and their ways, it can be sometimes a daunting task. It is frustrating, isn't it? It is frustrating to know that other people seem to have this secret information that they will not readily divulge to you. In religious circles, this perceived lack of sharing vital information has led to enormous frustration and anger, and in many cases, people just walking away from organized religion because they think of it as a pursuit for the elite. The Christian church has had its own criticism of hiding the whole truth from the world, especially from sincere believers. Entire heretical groups have sprung up over the church's history, claiming to have some special insight, some knowledge that only its selected adherents will ever learn about. One group that shows up occasionally in the scriptures is a group called the Gnostics, which comes from the Greek word gnosis, which means knowledge. The Gnostics even had their own gospels. You might have heard about them. The Gospel of Judas actually is one of theirs. There's the Gospel of Thomas. And the Gnostic gospels are also the inspiration for all kinds of speculation about hidden truths in the church. Stories that are portrayed about the Illuminati and the Knights Templar. And recently, of course, there's been, of course, the Da Vinci Code series. And it's interesting to note that the Vatican actually refused the producers to allow in their Catholic churches to film anything to do with the Da Vinci Code prequel called Angels and Demons. The refusal is born out of the Vatican's absolute outrage at the claims that are made in the Da Vinci Code that Jesus and Mary Magdalene were married and had children. Some other religious groups still have secret ceremonies. Did you know that? Even groups in this community. The Mormons or the Latter-day Saints have what they call secret wedding ceremonies, where only members of the Mormon Church are allowed to attend. And then there's the common experience that many of us had where we turn on our television or we read a book by a celebrity Christian preacher who claims to have found the secret. Usually a secret that can be attained if we would only do certain things. Most often, of course, to send a sizable donation to their organization. Of major concern to me is the guilt that is sold to naive people who believe a slick preacher who tells them that all the problems in their lives can be solved if only they had more faith. It's so frustrating to people whose lives are being devastated by things that are completely out of their control to be told that somehow it's entirely their fault because they don't have enough faith. People are frustrated at being told that the reason that they're not happy, go-lucky people, blessed with every imaginable material good, is a lack of knowledge or a certain type of faith. That sounds like Gnostic preaching to me. The truth is, there is no secret to finding happiness in life. Because, and I'm glad you're sitting down for this, you were never meant to find it. Oh, shocking, eh? At least not the kind of happiness we think of when we hear the word happiness. We often think of happiness as that sort of giddy sense of euphoria, a state of constant laughter and peace. We think of happiness as always getting our way in the world. And when we don't experience that kind of happiness on a regular basis, what do? We get angry. We get angry at God. We get angry at the people who steal away our blissful state. We get angry at the church for not telling us the secret to getting that kind of happiness. The truth is, if we take Jesus seriously, and I mean take him at his word, you may never experience anywhere near the level of happiness you think you deserve. Or in our muddled thinking, believe we were promised. If we take Jesus seriously, and if we claim to be his disciples, then how do we reconcile Matthew chapter 10 with prosperity preaching and teaching? I think of passages like this one, and there's another in Luke 14, if you want to look at it, that's quite similar. It's kind of the fine print of a contract in following Jesus. But unlike many of our legal contracts with that small fine print, Jesus doesn't use fine print. He lays it all out in front of us. Jesus is saying something like this. Follow me and I can guarantee persecution, strife in your families, threats, poverty, exclusion from friends and neighbors. You will be called on to turn the other cheek, to go the extra mile, to give your prized possessions away. Your secrets and those of your family will become known to everyone as if they were shouting from the mountaintop. Your body will likely be harmed, but your soul shall be preserved. It's no wonder that prosperity preachers never use passages like this. It's almost as if these passages are somehow excluded from their Bibles. If we take Jesus seriously, then we need to read over this passage, suddenly coming to church. A passage like this makes us very uncomfortable. And that's the point of this passage, to make us uncomfortable. If I am comfortable in my Christian faith, then I'm not really following Jesus. Because if I'm comfortable, that means I've made Jesus into something of my own creation. I have picked and chosen those aspects of Christ and his discipleship that are easy for me and have deliberately ignored those that challenge me and move me out of my comfort zone. It's as if I made faith out to be like a supermarket, where I can go through the aisles of that particular supermarket of faith and I can take all my favorites like chocolate ice cream. And as I pointed out to John, I can leave behind things like raisins and beets. For me personally, Matthew 10 is in terms like eating raisins and beets. I would rather pass, frankly. Thank you very much, but I don't want that. And that's the truth. If you want to follow Jesus, then you must accept the whole package. Even the parts we don't want. Lee Eckhoff of Vernon Hills, Illinois, tells a story from his childhood that speaks to our aversion to the hard aspects of following Jesus. This is what he says. When I was a kid in the 1950s, Parker Brothers came out with a game for church families like ours. It was called Going to Jerusalem. Your playing piece wasn't a Scotty dog like the worldly game of Monopoly. In going to Jerusalem, you got to be a real disciple. You were represented on the board with a little plastic man who wore a robe, a beard, some sandals, and a staff. In order to move across the board, you looked up answers to questions in the little black New Testament provided with the game. I remember that you always started in Bethlehem, and you made stops at Mount of Olives and Bethsaida and Capernaum, the stormy seas, Nazareth, and Bethany. If you rolled the dice well, you went all the way to the triumphal entry at Jerusalem. But in the game, you never went to the crucifixion. And you never went to the resurrection. In the board game, there are no demons, no angry Pharisees and Sadducees. You only made your way through the nice, safe stories of the Bible. It was a safe adventure, perfectly suited to Christian families for a Sunday afternoon walk with Jesus. Lee continues, it never occurred to me while leaning over that card table, jiggling dice in my hand, that traveling for Jesus wasn't meant for plastic disciples. Look, verses and little black Bibles. If you're going to walk with Jesus as his disciples in this world, you need to change your expectations, he says. After all, Jesus said, take up your cross and follow me. Faith lived authentically is an adventure. It's an adventure of heroic proportions. This is a concept we have failed to grasp. Certainly, it's one we failed to appreciate. Jesus speaks of following him as kind of like going into battle, although not with swords. He speaks, though, however, I should mention, I correct myself, he did speak of bringing swords, of willingly sacrificing yourself to the cause. And he uses this language because the world hates the cross, and the world hates our Lord who hung on it. The world hates the truth that God has called us to account, that salvation is only possible through Jesus. Whenever some great cause emerges in this world, it always confronts people with a choice. Either you accept it or you reject it. In terms of Christ and his kingdom, the world wants to shut it down. It wants it to shut it out. He wants us to shut up. There will in turn be conflict in this world between us and the world. Because true followers of Jesus won't shut down, won't shut out, and won't shut up. Jesus will not tolerate a false sense of peace or happiness if it means people are compromising their faith. Jesus is into truth lived openly and courageously. Maybe that's why David Murrow caused quite a stir a while back when he wrote a book entitled Why Men Hate Going to Church. Interesting title, eh? The Chicago Tribune reporting on the book wrote this. Men are bored out of their churches. Services and Bible study classes have become too safe, too soft, too nurturing. Men don't want to sit around talking about feelings and relationships. They want assigned tasks and goals. Most churches try and tame men instead of helping them find their own adventure. I got news for you. I don't think boredom is a gender issue at all. I think women are just as bored sometimes in church and feel just as strongly that something deeply, profoundly is missing in their lives of faith. May I humbly suggest that perhaps what is lacking is any sense of adventure in your faith journey. For too long, we've been encouraged to become observers of the faith by simply coming once a week, getting a little pep talk, and then going home to our regular existence. Jesus is shouting at us from Matthew 10. That's all of us, men and women, young and old, doesn't matter, that we need to engage in battles, both large and small. Battles that are being waged between his kingdom and this world. But we cannot be naive. If you're going to get involved, it's going to have consequences. It will cost you something of yourself. It will probably cost you relationships. It may cost you physical pain. It may cause you emotional strife. And yes, sometimes it may even cost you your life. That's the truth about following Jesus. We cannot hide from it. But I want to tell you that should you decide that you want to pick up your cross and follow Jesus, you're not as someone without resources. God has equipped his spiritual warriors very well. Perhaps the greatest of these resources is God's infinite love and care for his children. A care and knowledge of his children that's so deep that he even knows how many hairs are on your head. And if God knows all there is to know about this world to the point that even a death of a sparrow does not escape his attention, how can we be crippled by fear? But on the front lines of the battle of God's kingdom, how can we fear? Perhaps after reflecting on Matthew chapter 10, we realize that following Jesus is not what we imagine it to be like. But I would rather live the adventure God has prepared for me than wasting away on the sideline. We've got to embrace the Jesus way. The Jesus way is different than this world. And because of this, when we commit to him, we will become different too. A.W. Tozer expressed it very well when he wrote this. The real Christian is an odd number anyway. He feels supreme love for one that he has never seen, talks familiarly every day with someone he cannot see, expects to go to heaven on the virtue of another, empties himself in order to be full, admits he is wrong when he can be declared right, goes down in order to get up, is strongest when he's weakest, richest when he's poorest, happiest when he feels at his worst. He dies so he can live, forsakes order to have, gives away all, gives away so he can keep, sees the invisible, hears the inaudible, and knows that which passes knowledge. Are you looking for an adventure? Some grand purpose or meaning in your life? No one's keeping a secret from you. I'm not. Jesus isn't. There's no special knowledge some spiritual guru has that if you pay him or her enough money, they'll pass it along to you. God has revealed everything of value and purpose for our lives in the person of Jesus Christ. If you come to him, you will have answers. You will have direction. You will have purpose. In fact, after turning to Jesus, you may find that the questions that have burdened you for so long no longer matter. Especially after we come to rest in his loving embrace. For he is the rock on which we stand. All else is just sinking sand. Amen.